The Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to a Tuesday edition of the show. We are going to barrel through our program. And boy, do we have a lot of stuff on the blog and a bunch of stuff planned. But then we're following a press conference that just occurred. If you missed it, it was a press conference with the governor and the mayor touting the arrival of the Major League Baseball All-Star Game to Denver, Colorado in July. And I am still trying to figure out what I'm going to say about this. Because I am supposed to be excited. I probably traditionally would have been very excited. But I am so disheartened by Major League Baseball moving the All-Star Game in the first place that I don't even, I'm beside myself. Let's go ahead.
Well, it's Dave, a dilemma. It's a dilemma because you find yourself a beneficiary of an injustice and you can't get excited and happy about being the beneficiary of an injustice if you have a sense of justice within you. And I think you do. And I think I do. And I think a lot of others do.
I do, and I've never been to an All-Star game. This is very, very exciting, and I wish that it was happening any other time. Any other time. I'm super disheartened by this, and I'm frustrated because the White House has had a direct hand in this by repeating the lie over and over again. It's been called out by multiple sources.
Oh, but they're backing off now. Have you seen that?
Yeah, because the lie worked. The lie worked. Yeah. And now the lie, the only upside of this is that now everyone's paying attention to the lie. And Republicans are starting to push back about what's actually in the Georgia voter bill. And other Republicans around the country and, by the way, in the Georgia State House are pointing out that what are being called by Joe Biden from the White House, the return to Jim Crow on steroids, actually are not as restrictive as the voter ID laws in the president's home state of Delaware, where they've been living under Jim Crow forever now, apparently. This whole thing has gotten so sideways, and Major League Baseball did not have to weigh in. They didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to do a single thing, and they chose to do this to virtue signal, to give the impression that they were concerned about something when indeed they are still doing business in China. They're still doing business with Cuba. They are still doing business. By the way, there's a great letter from Marco Rubio to the Major League Baseball commissioner asking very pointedly if he was going to give up his membership to Augusta now. If Georgia has to be boycotted and Georgia has to be cast in such a negative light that you're going to move the All-Star game, surely you would not want to be associated with a mere golf course in such a horrid state. And as I was listening to the press conference before the show, I was doing some digging on the internet. Georgia has more minority startups and more minority-owned businesses than we have in Colorado. They have more in Atlanta than we have in the entire state of Colorado. So who is this hurting exactly? What are we proving? What are we demonstrating? Because this kind of nonsense, the only reason we are here right now is because Democrats decided to use voter laws which are less restrictive than those in New York State or in Delaware, and by the way, very similar to ours in Colorado, to try and paint the Republican Party as racist and white supremacists. And Major League Baseball said to every Republican or conservative that used to be a baseball fan, we think you are a racist and white supremacist. I'm sorry, that's the message I heard. And it's heartbreaking for me right now. I'm so torn, you know? I'm so incredibly torn because this is such an unnecessary and divisive stroke by Major League Baseball. And now Colorado is the beneficiary of this. And you know, great for the businesses downtown who have almost been destroyed by the actions of our Democratic governor over the last year. Great for them. I'm happy for them. But to get the All-Star game this way sucks. It just sucks. Everything sucks. and I'm irritated now. But let me just tell you what's on the blog, because it's giant and there's some awesome videos on the blog today. Awesome. So let's do this. Go to go to KOANewsRadio.com. Click on anything that says full schedule on air, Mandy Connell, and the headline that says Mandy's Tuesday blog, Futurist Thomas Fry, and what party are you in? Click on that. And here are the headlines you will find within.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South American. All the ships and clippers at sea. Let's go to press flash.
Today on the blog, our futurist is back with more futury stuff. How are you registered to vote? We may be getting the All-Star Game, and I've never cared less than I do right now. Some folks are pushing back on the idiocy of comparing voting laws to Jim Crow. The Colorado legislature protected the repair monopoly. The investigation at the King Supers is finished, but what about motive? More Tay Anderson bad behavior is in the news. Lester Holt thinks journalists should be more biased. Delaware's voting laws are literally Jim Crow. Make America California. Australia problems are way different than ours. This dude is winning at parenting so hard. If you donated to the Trump campaign at the end of last year, you may have been scammed. Justice Thomas argues that certain tech platforms should be treated like utilities. The great catch-up crisis is upon us. Rand Paul has some words about corporate virtue signaling. What happened to the Texas mask apocalypse? This Star Wars fan is better than other Star Wars fans, and you too can speak like Darth Vader. Those are the headlines on the blog at KOANewsRadio.com on the Mandy Connell page. Awesome videos today. Dave, well done on the two Star Wars videos.
Thank you.
Well done. One of them, I actually learned something about gases at the same time as being entertained. So there you go. I didn't know that there was a gas.
We all know about the helium thing. Yeah. I didn't know about this, though.
We don't know about sulfur hexafluoride.
Hexafluoride, and, yeah.
You're going to want to know about sulfur hexafluoride for the next party. Trust me on this.
You know then, what would happen if, this makes your voice much lower.
Yeah.
What would happen if James Earl Jones took it? Wow.
You wouldn't even be able to hear it. It would be so low, it'd just be...
Only certain animals could hear
exactly.
That. Yeah.
It would bust the windows out on your car from the bass.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, he's Russian or German or one of those Slavic languages. They kind of all sound the same. And he did something. He got a coffee stirrer. Not normally something that you would, you know,
a musical
create
instrument.
Music on. But this guy plays the Imperial March on a coffee stirrer. And I have to tell you, when I saw the title, I was like, okay, really? What is this going to be like? It's going to be a guy with a coffee stirrer going twang, 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 twang. I mean, you know. No. So worth the moments that you invest in that particular video. Rand Paul has some words about woke corporate culture, and he actually came out swinging on Fox News. And I got to tell you, I've never been one to endorse a boycott. I just think, you know, I try not to mess with people's incomes and livelihoods. But there's no such consideration given coming in the other direction. So Rand Paul makes the point quite forcefully. Okay, you know what? You want to play this game? Stop drinking Coke. Half of America, stop drinking Coke. Half of America, stop flying Delta Airlines. Half of America, stop watching baseball. And he's got a point. I've always jokingly said, you know, I don't care what you do with my money after I give it to you. If you provide me a great product, I'm going to visit your stores. I'm going to buy your products. But it's getting harder and harder to justify that. But there are certain things where I don't think I can replace them easily. I have shifted a lot of my shopping on Amazon to Walmart.com. I'm working on that. You know, and trust me, for someone like me, that leaves a mark. Right now, Amazon corporate, you know, shareholders are like, what's going on? Mandy Connell has dropped off her spending considerably. What's happening? Somebody call. Send some people. You know, it's like that. But he's got a point. A great story about what happened to the Texas mask apocalypse. You remember Governor Greg Abbott dropped all state restrictions in Texas on March 10th. And wow, Dave, what's today? Oh, April 6th, Dave. April 6th. Still waiting for the Texans to start keeling over and dropping dead. They are not. I had no idea. Dave, do you eat ketchup? Do we catch up on fries and stuff?
Definitely.
Yeah. How often do you eat it?
Well, I wouldn't say daily, but semi-daily.
I probably eat ketchup maybe once every 2 weeks or maybe once a week. I'd say only on hash browns and burgers. That's the only place that ketchup goes for me.
Burgers and steaks for me.
Wait a minute. Steaks?
Steaks?
I knew you were going to say that.
What a weirdo.
I feel like like we should just back away from this. Like just pretend we never heard that and we'll just say Dave eats it on hamburgers.
Not from Del Frisco steaks,
leave
though, right?
It on that.
No.
Just
no.
Okay.
No.
Okay. I'm just going to.
Wait, so Mandy,
you
said
regular everyday piece of meat. No problem with putting some ketchup there.
You said
what do you think hamburgers are?
Right.
They're chopped beef.
Yeah.
They're the scraps. That's why they're part of the chopped beef thing there.
But if you'd only put it on burgers and hash browns, Mandy, what do you put on your fries?
I don't eat fries. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have nothing against fries personally, but
by
I'm
the
at
way,
the age where I'm making strategic nutritional decisions based on the impact that they're going to have on my overall health, and fries don't make the cut most of the time.
Ketchup on hash browns is distasteful to me.
Oh, nobody's going to buy that. What ketchup on hash browns is normal. Steak and ketchup, not normal. I'm telling you, you should have just let it go, Dave. You should have stopped talking.
Ketchup for breakfast doesn't work for me.
Wait, nobody's asking you to.
Oh, I like ketchup on my eggs.
I've had ketchup on the eggs. I don't love it. I don't love it. If they're those powdered eggs, like the really hard ones, like when you're staying in a bad hotel and they have, quote, free
debate.
Breakfast.
There's a lifelong debate on hamburgers and hot dogs. Hamburgers, ketchup, hot dogs, mustard. That should be the rule.
I have had ketchup on my hot dog. I don't hate it. I'm not a traditionalist when it comes to hot dogs. I whatever strikes my fancy at that moment is what I put on my hot dog. I don't have a
There's
rigid
such a thing
hot
as
dog
tradition.
Routine. Okay, yeah. We're wasting a tremendous amount of time, and I have this ginormous blog. Let me get back to that. We're going to leave this ketchup discussion for another time because there's a ketchup crisis, Dave. We've got a huge shortage of ketchup. So
I'm gonna stock up.
Yeah, if you love ketchup, you better get some now. I'm gonna let Q know she's on rations right now. Okay, we only have one bottle of ketchup right now, so you got to tiniest bit that you need, no waste. Leave no ketchup behind situation right now.
One ketchup per customer.
Yeah, exactly. I had no idea. Justice Clarence Thomas, in arguing in a decision, actually he wasn't arguing, he was concurring with the decision. The decision vacated an earlier court decision that Donald Trump violated the First Amendment rights of people he blocked on Twitter. And in concurring with that ruling, they ruled it a moot point because Donald Trump is no longer in office, whatever the case, there was no point in having the case. But in his concurrence with that, Justice Thomas argues that certain tech platforms should be regulated like utilities. They should be considered public common good, that kind of thing. And he makes a pretty compelling argument. He's smart, that Justice Thomas. I mean, not smart enough to get a driver's license in Georgia. Because he's black. I mean, that's, he's smart otherwise. But just don't ask him to find a driver's license number. Too complicated. Too complicated. By the way, I'm being sarcastic. If you've never listened to the show before, that's not my true feelings. I'm making reference to earlier commentary that I had made about how people who oppose voter ID think it's because black people are too dumb not to be able to get a driver's license and, things of that nature. I have the cutest video ever. This thing pops up on my timeline every so often, and it's a dad and his little daughter, and she wants to know how to hula hoop, but she's too little. So dad provides the hula hoop action for her. It's so cute. And then, Dave, when we're in Denver and we go somewhere and we leave our doors open and our car running, the worst thing that's really going to happen to us is our car is going to be stolen, right? Not in Australia. In Australia, a random koala bear could crawl into your car that you then can't get out. And they look cute. But this guy will scratch your eyes out, apparently. And then a great John Stossel video. We are in the process of making America California. Is that a good idea? He says no, and he is right. Now, stories on the blog. A Georgia state rep is introducing two pieces of legislation in the state of Georgia. One of those pieces of legislation would make the voter laws in Georgia exactly like those in Delaware, which coincidentally would actually contract voting opportunities if they were to change to that from what they have now. He's also, that one is called the President Joe Biden Jim Crow on Steroids Voting Act, Dave. And then he's also got the Senator Chuck Schumer Racist Voter Suppression Voting Act, which would replace Georgia's new laws with New York's electoral laws instead. That means 9 days of early voting instead of 19. And again, a requirement that voters have an excuse in order to obtain an absentee ballot. And I just want to say to Representative Wes Cantrell, hats off, my friend. Hats off for coming up with a passive-aggressive and snarky way to drive the point home that all of these people who are mischaracterizing this bill are just big fat liars. I love this stuff. I mean, I love this stuff. Also on the blog today, Lester Holt, you know, this story's come up a couple times in conversation, so I thought I would put it on there. Lester Holt was accepting the Edward R. Murrow Lifetime Achievement Award for Journalism when he said the phrase, fairness is overrated, before he encouraged journalists to give up any pretense of objectivity and spend their time telling listeners what the truth, their truth, the only truth, is all about. And what do you think Edward R. Murrow would do if he saw this?
He's spinning in his grave right now as we speak. If it has his image on the award Lester Holt got, it melts as he touches it. Because this is everything that Murrow was opposed to.
I will tell you that at least he's honest. At least he's finally dropping any pretense of objectivity, of fairness, of any desire to do the traditional job of journalism, which is just tell the story. And he would rather be an advocate and advocate for the positions that he thinks are critical. And if that's what Lester Holt wants to do, he should become an opinion host. He should host his own show. I'm sure they'd give him one on MSNBC, but stop calling yourself a journalist. You can become an opinion host, like me. Yes, Dave.
Yeah, it's really disturbing that here he gets one of the most prestigious journalism awards that are given out, and the journalism community as a whole doesn't start screaming bloody murder. What? Opinion? No. Are you kidding me? Objectivity doesn't matter? Are you out of your mind? That's what journalism is all about. But peep, peep, you can hear the grasshoppers.
He got a standing O at the end, I bet. I don't know. I should look and see if he did, but I bet he did.
I mean, let's face it. The journalism on the right, as small as it is outraged. And there have been some columns on this.
Yep.
But there should be universal outrage in the journalistic community.
Nope.
And that's the scarier part. Not that he said it, but there's no reaction.
When we get back, a couple more stories, more Tay Anderson bad behavior in the news, and the investigation at King Soopers is finished, but what about motive? I'll tell you some rumors I've heard when we get back. But first, Susan Witkin is going to tell us actual news.
Yes, indeed I am. And oh, by the way, I just walk in and I have to say to Grant, so what are they talking about? And I guess Lester Holt got an Edward R. Murrow Award. Mandy and I got a regional Murrow Award.
Yes, we did. Yes. And that's actually when I was not giving my opinion. I was just doing news coverage. So,
well, we were doing news coverage, and that's what I'm doing here.
Welcome back. I want to respond really quickly to a tweet about the Georgia voter law and how the president has been running around lying about it. This texter who sent us a message at 56690 said, "You're right. The Georgia legislature has no responsibility whatsoever. I'm sure the lawyers with MLB are just stupid people, and there is no ill intent from the good legislatures in Georgia. The intent of the legislators in Georgia was to make sure that voter fraud got more difficult. even as they expanded access to the ballot overall. Let me repeat that for those of you in the back. It expanded ballot access. Let me tell you the truth about what is being demagogued real quickly. Number one, that voters will somehow be denied access to food or water while in line. There will be an opportunity for poll workers to leave water stations out where people can access them. The only thing that can't happen is somebody actively campaigning for another, for a candidate or an issue, cannot walk to someone in line and hand them anything of value, which is exactly the same as the law in New York State. Exactly the same. Now, Georgia law also provides for people who are partisanly campaigning for candidates or issues to stand 151 feet away from the polling place and do whatever the hell they want. They can set up tents, they can have food, they can give out whatever they want 151 feet away from the polling line. That hardly seems like a burden too high to, you know, too high to crawl over. The notion somehow that voters will be, this is about voter suppression, when in reality, it expanded opportunities to vote. It expanded the times that people can vote. It expanded the number of days on the weekends that polls can be open. It expanded all of these things. The Washington Post, hardly the bastion of right-wing conservatism, gave Joe Biden a 4 Pinocchio rating for him saying it ends voting hours early so working people can't cast their vote after their shift is over. That's a lie. And the point here is that all of this reaction is based on a lie. I just wanted to clarify that. I told Dave I didn't want to talk about that anymore, and now it's doing it again. Hey, Tay Anderson back in the news, but it's old news that's back in the news. Tay Anderson was recently accused in a post from BLM 5280 in an of so far uncorroborated in any way, shape, or form accusation of some kind of sexual assault, misconduct, or something by a woman who obviously is not going to come forward because she is not going to come forward. So those accusations, you can take them with a grain of salt. But now we find out from a group of women who worked with him a couple of years ago on a board that he consistently created a hostile work environment with his overtly sexual conversations and sexual overtures to women in the organization. And he's now had to respond to that. It's like it just never ends with that guy. I mean, surely Denver can do better. The investigation at the King Supers in Boulder is complete. That doesn't mean that the entire investigation is over. It just means that the police have released the grocery store back to its parent company, Kroger. It is not reopened yet. As of this morning, it is not reopened yet. No word on what King Super has to do. I would think, Dave, don't you think this is like if you're the grocery store, this is your opportunity to kind of come in and freshen everything up, renovate, kind of welcome people back to the store, maybe, you know, I don't know. It might already be really nice. It isn't Boulder. Could be a Kroguchi. You know? Anyway. I just have a question. It seems odd to me that we're still not being given any kind of remote kind of motive. This is very reminiscent of the Las Vegas shooting. I reached out to my sister-in-law a couple months ago and I said, hey, have you guys, because they live in Las Vegas. I said, have you guys heard anything more about the guy in Las Vegas who shot everybody up? And she's like, no, nothing. It just went away. Whenever that happens, I'm inclined to think that there's some kind of terrorist connection. Obviously, the guy in Vegas was white, so that's not where you go to right away. But I've heard rumors from people who might be in the know that there's a terrorism angle to what happened in Boulder. At some point, do we get to know? Do we get to find out? I'd like to know, wouldn't you? And I do realize that nationally, because that shooting did not fit the bad white guy with a gun narrative, that it fell off of the news outlets immediately. Did anybody else notice this? We're still seeing coverage here locally. The story is nowhere. Nationally. Now it's a local story. It's just a local story. It's fine.
Plus, if the guy had been shot and killed at the scene, then you'd maybe never find out what his motive was.
Sure.
But we have him in custody.
Yeah.
We've questioned him. We have a lot of information. They're just not releasing it at this point, I think. Eventually, yeah. I think we'll know.
Because I know enough about how the military covers stuff up with cover stories about people being killed in training accidents, that I'm suspicious of anything where it just goes away. It's like, oh, well, just don't pay attention to that anymore. It just went away. I'm like, 10 people are dead. How do you just not pay attention to it? How do you just let that fall off? How do you just, I don't know. We'll see, maybe. I certainly will be keeping an eye on it for you. If there's anything to report there, I'll let you know. The Colorado legislature, have you ever heard of this right to repair movement, Dave?
No.
Oh, I think you'll love this. The right to repair movement, which I did not know existed until today, is a movement that would force manufacturers of products to provide the schematics and parts to repair people so they can fix some of the things that break. You know, my mixing board that I use at home, my pots are going bad. I'm having some issues. And one of the engineers looked at it and he goes, you know, as cheap as these things are now, just it's cheaper to buy a new one than to try and get the parts for it. It used to be on a mixing board that I could buy all of the individual components and you just unscrewed 4 screws, pulled it up, unconnected the wires, put the new ones in and popped it back in place. You can't even do that anymore cost effectively. Now, on the one hand, it means that the overall product has gotten significantly cheaper. But if that's the case, that means the parts should have gotten significantly cheaper. And if you could allow someone to know how to fix it, you could just fix these things instead of this kind of consumer society thing that we do, which is throw it away and get a new one.
It's a disposable society. That's what we've come to. We used to repair everything.
Yeah.
And now, like you said, everything has become so inexpensive that we just throw things away.
Dave, we just had to get the motherboard on our ovens replaced, right? The repair was half the price of a new set of double ovens. And it's like, dang, you know, I'm not getting a new set of double ovens because it's still half, but it was an expensive repair. But when you have more points of failure and they're all computerized, this is what happens. There was a meme I saw yesterday that was like the Harvest Gold refrigerator from 1970. And the caption was, you know, a 1970s refrigerator, I'll love you forever and run just as well. I mean, we had the same fridge my entire childhood. And it was the same amount of cold my entire childhood.
We had the same telephone my entire childhood.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the right to repair movement, there's a whole movement of people that are trying to get it so we can repair our stuff. So there was a bill in the Colorado legislature and it got clobbered. It only got one vote in committee because our legislators are bought and paid for by the tech industry who are telling them that they don't want people to be able to repair your iPhone. They don't want somebody to be. Why do you think we can't take the batteries out anymore in our cell phones? Because when I was able to take the batteries out on my Motorola, I had that thing for 4.5 years because it ran forever. It just ran forever with that battery. So it's kind of like, ugh.
The automobile industry, they have all the books and schematics on everything, correct?
Yes.
So
yeah,
you can obtain that stuff and repair it if you're that talented.
But what about your television? That's what I'm saying. It's like, this is about your cell phone, your television, your digital camera. They had people testifying in Colorado about not being able to get their motorized wheelchairs fixed. Think about that. They can't get their motorized wheelchairs fixed. This guy had to wait 2 months to get his wheelchair fixed. That's horrible.
In some sense, I understand it, though. When VCRs first came on the market, they were like $350. Mm-hmm. And you get those things repaired. Now they're $20. The technology has become so simplified and sophisticated that it's no longer practical to repair some of these things.
But my point being, I'm going to use my board as an example. If the entire price of the board, because I just bought another one yesterday, it'll be here tomorrow. If the entire price of the board has dropped so dramatically, that means all of the parts have dropped dramatically too. So why can't I buy that one part that I need, which should also in theory be dramatically cheaper, especially on something like this that I could ostensibly fix myself. If I had the part, I could drop it in. That I can do. I couldn't fix my LED television. I wouldn't try and do that. You know, I mean, I have limits, but some of this stuff is simple enough. I should be able to change the battery in my phone.
Yes.
That should be an option. And it's not. And the Florida, the Colorado legislature killed it dead, stabbed it in the heart, and then jumped up and down on its dead body, Dave. They don't want us to have the right to repair our own stuff. And a nine-year-old testified, Dave. A nine-year-old. And if there's anything I learned from Greta Thunberg, it's that when a child speaks, we're supposed to pretend they know what they're talking about. I'm just throwing that out there. I have a great story about people, African-American people starting to push back on the use of this kind of, it's Jim Crow, it's a Jim Crow law, when we're talking about the kinds of things that are being compared to Jim Crow now, because they are simply not. And it downplays the true horror and the true repressiveness of those laws significantly to compare what happened then to what is happening now. And then at 2 o'clock, we are going to talk about this story because we had it yesterday and I didn't have time. I want to talk party affiliation, because in Colorado, we now have way more unaffiliated voters than Republican or Democrat voters. And I have questions. If you're unaffiliated, I'd like to know why. I'd like to know why you do not, you know, and then if you want to talk about which party you lean, like you lean Republican or lean Democrat, you know, that's fine too. But I want to have a conversation about why we still allow the two parties who don't represent a majority of us in either party to still make all the rules. This is a genuine question. I would like to see the decentralization of parties. I would love to see them remove party affiliation from the ballot. That would go a long way towards forcing people to actually investigate candidates. When you just put them on the ballot in alphabetical order, here you go, here's your candidates, figure it out. Especially with mail-in ballots. You
well,
got time.
I don't necessarily agree with that. For one, here's one example. Judges don't have to have party affiliations. Mm-hmm. And we don't know who the heck we're voting for when we, you know, retain judges. And that's a disadvantage, not an advantage in that case. But I want to know where they're coming from.
Judges are also barred from campaigning. Like, I mean, judges, that's a completely different animal, because we can't assess their work. You know what I'm saying? We can't, unless you are a court follower who's going to follow every case and figure out what, you know, whether that judge is more pro-defendant or pro, you know, prosecution, whatever. That is a completely different animal. When I'm voting for governor, I can make a judgment on how this person's governs. They're going to campaign. They're going to try and win my vote. They're going to have a platform out there that I can read and judge and figure out what I want to do. So judges, I hate the way we pick judges.
I think judges hide behind this idea of, oh, I'm totally objective all the time. I have no affiliation with anybody. Garbage. All judges have that. And we know it from their voting records. You look at the Supreme Court and, you know, look at the conservative wing and the liberal wing. They're consistent, pretty consistent all the time. I like to know that before I vote.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily on party affiliation. You'd think that, but Justice John Roberts blew that out of the water a long time ago.
Yeah, that's an exception. But it's pretty, we know where Justice Thomas is going to be on any given issue. The great majority of the court pretty much is either left or right. There's a swing vote or two, but that's rare.
I'd rather have more information about how they rule. I'd rather have a better scoring system. I'd like to know which organizations they belong to. There's other ways without party affiliation. And judges, again, it's totally different.
I guess the point was, if you bring that into the regular realm of voting for governors and senators, it's going to be giving you less information rather than more.
No, it's going to, no.
The public is lazy enough as it is.
That's fine. If the public is lazy enough, we have mail-in ballots, Dave. If you can't, even if it's as simple as if I'm a teacher and I'm a big teacher union person, I can go to the union site and they're going to tell me who to vote for. And by the way, I'm not saying eliminate parties as people are running, campaigning. You could have on the front page of your website, hey, I'm a Republican, I'm running for this office. I don't care about that. I'm saying take it off the ballot. Force people to think before they just mark the D or mark the R or mark the whatever. I'm tired of ignorant, uninformed voters not having any clue what they're voting for and just voting on party affiliation.
It's a strategy. Voting party, not person, is a good strategy. You may not agree with it, but it's a legitimate strategy. It's not just mindless. That's the way our system is constructed.
And there's nothing to say you can't do that, but at least it will be an informed mindless vote, not just marking names that you've never seen before. You're just looking for the R. That's what I'm talking about. I can't. That there's no value to an uninformed vote, in my opinion. And forcing people to take a little bit responsibility for their actions and a little bit more awareness before they cast a ballot, I'm all in favor of that. So, you know, we'll agree to disagree. But when we get back, we've got Thomas Fry, our futurist, coming on. We're talking microtechnology, nano stuff.
Sounds small.
Wait. I love this hour. Every week I learn something interesting and new, even though I know I'm not getting a flying car.
Well, yeah. I was thinking there are a couple cliffs around, but you don't want to do that. You want to be able to land and walk away from it. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Something like Susan Witkin, what's coming up in the news?
You know, they do have cars, though, that are on land and that can go in water.
Those are amphibious vehicles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to Chuck about that. Navy knows all about that.
I just met someone who drove one of those things. Dang it. Oh, who was that? I can't remember.
And we're not talking those duck trucks either.
No, I'm talking about those amphibious assault vehicles that come off the back of a ship and then drive into the surf and take troops up to the shore.
Now that's
I just met someone
cool.
who used to drive that in the Marines.
Really?
Yeah. Very cool.
That is a very cool thing.
He showed me a picture and I was like, dude, I want to ride in one of those. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what's coming up in your news?
What's really cool is that Coors Field is going to be hosting this year's All-Star Game. I'm going to have a little bit about that. We're going to have reaction from the Colorado Secretary of State. The CDC is updating its guidance on disinfectants and soaps to stop the spread of COVID. I'll tell you about it 1 o'clock right here. KOE News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
The Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, the architect of the future.
The future is now.
It's futurist Thomas Fry on the Mandy Connell Show.
How could you possibly know what the future holds?
On KOA News Radio.
All right, we are back and we are joined by our favorite futurist. Well, okay, technically our only futurist, but he's my favorite, even if he's the only one. Thomas Fry, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Good to see you on Zoom, which is still working for us, Grant. Just letting you know. There you go. Hey, how you doing? Thomas is part of the Da Vinci Institute and your job, I tell people about you all the time, Thomas. Like, honestly, your ears should be burning all the time because I talk about you ridiculously a lot. The Da Vinci Institute is a company that helps other industries figure out where their industry is going so you can plan accordingly and maybe being part of the future instead of being part of the past. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I help people understand the future from a lot of different perspectives. So tomorrow I'm going to be giving a talk for a group at Daniels College and some of the students there. And so we're going to work our way into this whole topic of future jobs.
See, I think that's incredibly interesting. And one of those things that I also feel all university and colleges are about 10 years behind on where they need to be in terms of training students for what's going to be available in the future.
I would agree with that. I think I use the phrase quite a bit that they're shooting behind the duck.
Yes, exactly.
We need to anticipate what all the changes are. Not all of them fall into that category. Not all colleges do, but a lot of them do.
Yeah. It's like the military is always preparing for the last war as well. That's kind of the old adage there. So let's talk for a second. Dave said, you know, Thomas wants to talk about micro industries and I'm like, great, tiny stuff. And then Thomas is like, no, that's not right at all, which is why I don't get to work at the Da Vinci Institute. I just have to work on the radio. What are micro industries?
Well, every new industry starts as a micro industry. It starts as one or two businesses that'll crop up and create an entire new industry. And lots of our industries today will fragment into tiny niches and those will spin off into major new industries. So the clothing industry, as an example, we're going to have a piece of that breaks off into smart clothing. So then we're going to have this whole smart clothing industry. And if you start adding sensors to your clothes, then you start asking this question of, well, if I could get more information off of my clothes, what things would I want to know? What things can I do with those sensors? And then you start going through that process and come up with lots of different ideas.
You know, that the sensors in clothing thing is fascinating to me because I am from Florida, where more than people would like to tell you, people playing sports drop dead of heat exhaustion. And it happens a lot because of the heat and the humidity. If you could create activewear that had sensors that could send an alarm or an alert to a smartwatch or whatever saying, you know, you're reaching a dangerous body temperature, that's a life-saving technology.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if it could tell you if you're on the verge of contracting a disease or something that, and or if it could tell you that you're next to somebody that has a disease, then you'd want to know that as well.
So basically you're going to get like cootie catchers in your clothes. You're going to know if anyone around you has cooties. That seems a little invasive to me that you would be able to find out who, well, could you, what kind of, you know, what does that do for the dating life? You know what I mean? The first thing you do is sidle up to somebody to see like, okay, they have, nope, that's okay. All those are acceptable diseases. That seems a little much, Thomas.
Yeah, we have to figure out how to draw borders around what's realistic and what isn't. And at what point do we go overboard? Because yes, I mean, we could use this to intrude on lots of other people's lives as well.
So what are the micro industries that you are watching or things that are bubbling up or popping up? Because some of these will end up going nowhere or kind of leveling out and staying at a certain level, whereas other micro industries will become something.
Well, right. I mean, if we go down the path of flying drones, we've just gone through this whole hobbyist era of flying drones. And I started off by asking this question, well, what if I added a video projector to a drone? What capabilities would that give me? So I started thinking about the video projector on a drone, and I thought, well, it'd be nice for art installations. You could have fly these drones around and project things onto these buildings or surfaces. Mm-hmm. And then it occurred to me that, oh, well, I could actually have advertising and I could fly in front of people and project ads in front of them. This could become the most annoying form of advertising ever invented.
No, worse than the robocall, because it's going to take a lot for the robocall to be beaten in that arena. You know what's interesting that you brought up the drone stuff? Now, when you go on the internet, there's some things happening in China. One I think I saw from South Korea, where they are doing massive drone installations and making light shows, you know, where they have them all working in concert, almost like a Swallows kind of movement. And of course, me, I'm like, can you imagine that as an offensive weapon? That is terrifying. If all of a sudden you're just walking down the street and this drone thing, I mean, it's when you start thinking about the applications of all of these things, it's a little unnerving.
Right. So if you go down the list, you think about, well, if I have a drone and I add sensors to it, what can I do with that? If I add lights to it, if I add speakers or sound to it, if I add a robotic arm to the drone, what capabilities does that give me? Or infrared vision, you know, you can just start adding and subtracting things to this drone. And suddenly you have all kinds of ideas for startup businesses. And these are going to come out of left field and come out of the woodwork as it creates our industries for the future. That's where our employment's going to come from. We're going to have a lot of employment in these startup businesses.
Now, let me ask you this. Employment in the sense of, because, you know, I feel like when we have conversations about employment, we're talking about two different kinds of employment. We're talking about highly educated, high level employment of college graduates, engineers, things of that nature who are doing the designing and the creation of the plans for all of these things. But are we ever going to get back to a time where someone who doesn't have an advanced degree, who maybe just graduated from high school or maybe just went to community college, are they going to be building these things ever in the United States? Have you guys analyzed where the future of production might be?
Yeah, there's lots of answers to that question. The production stuff is going to start moving all over the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've really, COVID has really broken all of our supply chains. And we're rapidly trying to get control over the supply chains now that have been severely damaged. And so we're going to start seeing a lot of that manufacturing coming back to the United States or Canada or Mexico and close by so that we have more control over it. And then as things start transitioning, the people and the work that they're doing is not going to be necessarily all the highly skilled programming type mm-hmm. work. We're going to need a lot of people everything breaks down. We're going to need people to repair things and fix things and just to deliver things and to help push things along. So it's we're going to need people to monitor what's happening because we're not going to trust all of these, the gadgetry to do it all. Mm-hmm. So there will be plenty of jobs. I actually think we're moving into an era of super employment, only the jobs that we're going to be creating are not going to be full-time jobs. A lot of a high percentage of them will be gigs. And the big problem is we're not teaching people how to work in a gig environment.
But don't you think that we're going to, I've always thought this. I have friends who work strictly on a gig economy basis. A lot of them already had a reputation though, because they'd worked in corporate America. They're my age. They're in their, you know, 50s. So their gigs are super strong and they can get it by word of mouth and reputation. Younger people don't necessarily have that built up yet. Don't you think that there's an opening for someone who is willing to kind of consolidate that gig economy in a more broad way for every profession? I use Fiverr.com all the time for graphic design work, for all kinds of other things that have to be done quickly that I don't know how to do. It's cheap, it's effective. That's a great example of that. Do you think we're going to see more opportunities where people can upload their stuff to a website like Fiverr and bid on those or try and win those projects? Is that the future?
Yeah, actually, a lot of companies are going to, they have something that needs to get done and they look at it and say, well, do I need to hire a full-time person for that? Or can I hire somebody for 2 months or 2 weeks or 2 days or even 2 hours? So the platforms are going to get much more precise and give us the ability to bring somebody in just for that particular project that we need help on. And I actually think a lot of the co-working spaces are going to transition into what I refer to as business colonies. And these will be places where the freelancers go to pick up new gigs. I think there's going to be a whole gig communities that are going to crop up out of the woodwork. I think that's going to be kind of the transition that happens over the next few years here. We're still learning all of the ins and outs of working in this new environment. Working from home has changed how we think about work.
Right.
It changes our priorities. It changes how we relate to other people and how strong these bonds are, these relationships that we have with these other people that we only see on a screen. So a lot of these things are still in a state of transition. So we're working our way through that. But in the middle of all of this, it's creating openings for new opportunities. It's creating openings for new jobs. And people are going to be figuring out what to do with that.
What are we, you know, when we talk about micro industries, are they things that pop up to solve a specific problem that are not being solved?
In some cases, yes, it's an entry point. Once you solve that problem and you have good cash flow coming in, that gives you the opportunity to expand into other areas. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them will start as just a little tiny niche business, but then they can grow up into something much bigger. I mean, Amazon just started as a little niche business selling books.
I told Thomas off the air, I'm like, I used to make fun of Amazon on when I first started. Now who's making fun of who? Yeah, because they own me. So, you know, it's whatever. but it was obviously Jeff Bezos saw, he had a vision. He had a vision of perhaps what could be and started with books. And now it's hard to argue that that wasn't a genius move. So how do you or me specifically as a consumer and perhaps investor, what do we look for in a promising industry? What do we look for in a promising micro industry?
Well, in most startups, you want to look at kind of how well the business is run, mm-hmm. how well they execute things, and just having a grasp of new technology doesn't give you a huge advantage. It gives you just a tiny advantage. So it all comes down to managing the opportunities that you see in front of you and kind of expanding your vision and looking at what's laying out there in the opportunity landscape. There's these things are going to come out of left field. I mean, we're going to have lab-grown meats that are going to give opportunities for new kinds of food that we put on our tables.
You keep bringing up the lab-grown meats, and it still grosses me out to hear the words lab-grown meats. It's just weird.
Well, they're not going to use that phrase. It'll be cultured meats or clean meats or something like that. We're going to see a lot of that coming out of the woodwork.
You know what I'm going to call it? I'm going to call it Meatry, because it's meat grown in a Petri dish. That's what I'm calling it. Meatry. They can steal that for their marketing. There you go. It's probably good too, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. The autonomous cars, they're going to create all kinds of opportunities. The one example I like to use is the idea of speed dating. You have cars that are designed for speed dating. So two people get into a car and it drives around for 5 minutes, literally speeding around for 5 minutes, and then you get out and then somebody else gets in. So is that a good business model?
You know, I don't know. There's a lot of getting in and out of cars in that, and I'm not sure it's altogether worth it at that point. But you know what? Never let it be said that someone won't try that, because when it comes to getting people to date, yes, they will try that over and over again. When you look at, I don't want to go back to the future of jobs just for 1 second. When you're talking to college students, what are you telling them about where the future is and what they should be looking at and where they should be going?
Well, we look at different technologies. We look at what some of the real promising emerging technologies are. And I'm always looking for what's getting traction, what's actually moving forward. And then you find different signals about the future and the news headlines and the breakthroughs that are happening. As an example, there's a news article that came out that says Procter & Gamble's is looking like they're moving into this space where they can actually 3D print pharmaceutical drugs. So if you think about the advantages that creates, and I was talking about this 10 years ago, but what you can do is today doctors can only prescribe 200 milligrams or 400 milligrams of certain drugs, because that's the only doses that have come out so far. But a 3D printed pill could be done in 137 milligrams or 367 right. milligrams, depending on what your body needs at that moment. And so having that level of precision changes the whole drug industry, the whole pharmaceutical industry.
Let me ask a question about that. Would that be done at the pharmacy level? So technically you would have computerized compounding?
I think so. I'm not sure how this all spins out, but they're actually talking about combining. You take five pills in the morning, you could combine them all into one pill and you just take
right.
that.
Well, people don't realize a lot of side effects from common medications come because the dosage is too big for the size of the person, or, you know, it's a very, it's an inartful science, prescribing medication. So that sounded like kind of a no big deal, but that's a huge thing. If you're a 95-pound, you know, 65-year-old woman, you don't need the same dose as my 6'4", you know, something, something pound husband. You just don't. And that's kind of where we are right now with a lot of medications. It's very one size fits all.
Right. And we just take a guess at how much we need at that moment.
Hold on for a second, Thomas. We are going to take a time out. Susan Witkin has got some news. We are going to continue our conversation with Thomas Fry, our futurist, when we get back. I'm going to check and see if anybody sent us any text questions for you today, Thomas. We'll be back after this. But Susan, what do you have coming up in your news?
MLB making it official, announcing Denver will host this summer's All-Star game. But Georgia's governor, what does he have to say about it moving to Colorado? I'll tell you. And Have you ever wondered how long will your coronavirus vaccine actually last? I've got info on that, too, at 1:30 right here. KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
We are back. Thomas Fry, our futurist, on board talking about all kinds of stuff today. And in the show behind the show that happens off the air, Dave and Thomas were talking about a couple of different things. And since I was doing commercials, Dave, what were you talking about again? Because I want to talk about this.
We were talking, first of all, about government, the role they play in regulating all these new technologies. They always are a step behind, obviously, but it's a constant battle between creating new things that can do stuff that we want, but that also have some dangers with them, and government sticking their big nose in it and trying to tell us what is good and what is not so good, and making laws that prevent us from doing things we may want to do. So how does that battle look for the future as the technology, the speed at which it's developing just increases every day?
Yeah, well, let's take it a scenario here where somebody creates, they take an entire bank and they put it on a server. So this whole banking industry, people can send money and get make payments through it. But this is a bank that gets put onto a satellite and gets launched into space, and it travels around the Earth. Now, who actually can regulate a bank that has a headquarters on a satellite that's traveling around the Earth? Whose laws come into play, and who can regulate that? It raises lots of interesting questions.
That sounds like a James Bond plot line, actually. We were just talking. I mean, like, honestly, if you were a bad actor, and especially now with what we're doing, I'm not going to pretend that I understand cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and all of that stuff and blockchain currency. But if you were a bad actor who wanted to launch a satellite-based bank and had the means to do so, to use cryptocurrency and or maybe currency conversion, who would be in charge of that? Who would be, I mean, would it, I don't know. I think that does raise very interesting questions.
Yeah, so we don't have answers for all of these things, but virtually every technology that we have, there are some bad actors that'll figure out how to use it in the wrong way. So figure out ways of using it against us. And that's what we need to defend ourselves against. So if you take another scenario that the cities in the future will have drones that are flying back and forth over the cities that are scanning and creating digital models of the city. And so as we add more and more sensors to our communities, we'll have the ability to search for things that smell like a certain way or taste like a certain way, or that I'm looking for something with this texture, with this harmonic vibration, with this specific gravity. We don't have to know how it's doing it, but we'll create these search engines for the physical world. Now, that'll enable us to do things like, I want to search for where is that dog with rabies right now in the city? If there's a John Doe a stalking case, we can figure out how John Doe got, if they got close to Jane Doe during this period of time. And we can figure out what's the busiest intersection in the city, what's the most dangerous bridge in the city, just by having this constant surveillance. But, so there's positive things, but invariably it's going to get used wrong.
Right. And isn't that kind of what we're ending up with social media? Whatever the intent behind social media, and honestly, big tech, it's gone from creating this cool thing that we could all share to making us the product and making us what's being sold on a daily basis. And it seems to me that at some point, that technology, watching The Social Dilemma for me was, I kind of intellectually knew, you know, you're like, oh, of course they're tracking us. Did not understand the depth and the breadth of the way that we are being tracked every single day, which is honestly why I've laughed when people have said, you know, you get the vaccine, they're injecting a chip in you so the government can follow us. I'm like, seriously? Everything we do is followable unless you have an analog phone and you don't have a cell phone and you've never been on the internet and you only deal with cash. Somebody knows everything about you. And if anybody has the ability to gather all of that information into one place, and that's what we have now. And now we're the product instead of the user. And it's gone way beyond what I think anyone could have possibly anticipated when they first built their first MySpace page, you know?
Yeah, and we were also talking about the privacy technology issue. On the one hand, you have the technology now virtually to do kind of a U-2 plane spy mission with drones. You used to have to have this high tech, you know,
with the big round thing on the top,
50,000 feet and all that.
Yeah.
Now you can, you know, buy one at Radio Shack or something, and you can take high resolution pictures of your neighbor for whatever reason. Now, what can that neighbor do? I guess there's developing cloaking technology to protect your privacy and combat it. Who's going to win? I don't know.
Yeah. So there's a group of people out there that are the super news junkies, that they want to know everything that happened in a crime scene. If something terrible happened in some place, they want to get the inside story of all that. So there's invariably we're going to have some news, some sinister news organization that fly these mosquito sized drones into every crime scene, and then they will surveil the entire area, and we'll get images and in kind of the inside scoop of what all happened at that crime scene. Even though the police are going to try to cordon it off and try to keep it clean and everything. So I see that being kind of an interesting business model in the future that is going to go cross-grain with kind of the rules according to good.
Example, police want to protect the crime scene so that they can not release information until they have a suspect in custody.
Right.
News organization will have their mosquito drones in there and put it on the front page of the paper
tomorrow. I think it's going to be way worse if you're famous, because this, I'm hearing paparazzi in my mind. Can you imagine? There will not be a moment of peace. Now, already, Thomas, I'm thinking, but if you're a celebrity, couldn't you create some kind of electrostatic force field around your house that if a little tiny mosquito drone tried to thrive, it would get fried and just fall to the ground, and then you could laugh and laugh because you won? I mean, I'm just speculating on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, creates kind of an arms race of sorts, that people are going to be looking for some sort of a cloaking device, some sort of technology that masks them at all times, or at least covers their house and cloaks it in a way that people cannot be looking in from the outside. That's going to be hot selling technology in the future.
Let me ask this, though. Is that technology being developed now? Are we 5 years away? Are we 10 years away? Or we don't know. And it seems odd to me that would be the wave of the future, when currently we have people. I have friends that have security cameras in every room in their house that they access on their phone, which is great. But other people can access that. I mean, we have this overinflated sense of what security is capable of in some cases, you know? So it sounds like we're going to go, do we have to just wait until somebody's entire life is exposed in some kind of hack or breach before people go, wait a minute, maybe having a bathroom or a camera in every room in my house is a bad idea.
Right. All of these things just open the door for things that can go wrong. And so they create more problems than people will invent new solutions. And so it's kind of back and forth moving forward into dealing with all of the problems that come out of all this emerging technology. And it's a lot of them.
So I want to touch on something that we were talking about actually before the show that just kind of popped up in the last little bit here about quantum computers. Because this, to me, sounds like the beginning of the end, the robot takeover, because we're going to go from normal artificial intelligence that we currently have that can learn as it goes, develop and all of that stuff, which people say already artificial intelligence is smarter than we are. And now we're talking about quantum computing and artificial intelligence. This seriously is the beginning. This is how Terminator started. I just want to throw this out here. But what is quantum computing compared to what we have now?
Yeah, regular computing works with ones and zeros, and that's how you do the programming. It's all reduced down to ones and zeros. Quantum computers work on the probability of ones and the probability of zero, and they can do it in a much faster way than ever before. This was all first suggested by Richard Feynman quite a few years ago. And that was, he's kind of the grandfather of quantum computing, if you will. But yeah, quantum computing has been demonstrated to be, I don't know, just like a billion times faster than regular computing, but it only works in certain applications right now. And one of them is actually breaking our encryption system. So eventually, sometime over the next few years, we're going to all have to switch to quantum level encryption. That's coming very soon. But we're discovering more and more ways that quantum computers can be useful, and we're having more and more breakthroughs. And so I'm working with a group that's actually looking at trying to create a quantum computer accelerator right now. And this is, I think, probably a good time to launch such a thing.
Explain what a quantum computer accelerator is, because I didn't know what it was when he said it earlier, and then I had to ask. Well, I thought I'd ask again for the audience.
The accelerators are places where startup companies come together, and you have generally one or two cohorts a year where you bring in 6, 8, 10 startups, and you coach them to a point where they can become better at what they're doing.
Are they sharing information among them, or is this, I mean, are you bringing in people to collaborate on the bigger issues?
Right. You bring in advisors, you bring in financial people, you bring in VCs, you look at it from lots of different angles. And so you take them through a process to actually produce a higher grade of startup. And so when they leave, generally a lot of them will pivot and try to start solving different problems than when they first started. But there's lots of great examples of really stellar businesses that have come out of accelerators.
Let me ask a really dumb question. I know that sometimes I read stories where scientists put all of these supercomputers, they get all their brain power together to work on one problem. Have we ever discovered when they got a computer to solve a problem in a supercomputer kind of way that it was wrong? Have computers ever been wrong in those? Because a lot of this has to do with modeling and things of that nature. So models are only as good as, you know, who created the models.
Well, right. I mean, if you have bad algorithms, if you have bad code, you're going to get bad results.
Right.
And so we're working our way through all of the problem areas here. And it takes a long time. With every new technology, you have to work your way through the crappy stages before you get to the stuff that's really good. Like artificial intelligence, as an example, we're using it on very niche applications right now. We don't have any good kind of universal artificial intelligence that we can tap into for multiple applications. And it's the same thing that's going to happen with quantum computing. It's going to be used in niche applications initially, and then we're going to open the doors a little wider and get more general applications. Lots of different ways of looking at this emerging technology, but all of these things it's creating our future. It creates our economy. It creates our jobs. So that's why I think it's so important that we understand kind of how this is working and where we're headed.
Oh, I totally agree. Not to mention, I mean, you talk to kids that are going into college and you're trying to give them some kind of guidance. And when my oldest son was going to college, I would send him articles, to your point. I would send him articles about things that I thought would interest him and be useful in the future, robotics, engineering, things of that nature. He ended up majoring in history, so I was looking forward. He was looking back, but that's okay. I'm just kidding. He's a very responsible adult with a good job, so I can't complain. But it's interesting to think that, you know, 30 years ago in 1990, I got my first CompuServe account. And 30 years from now I have technology that I walk around with in my hand a vast majority of the time that is, I couldn't even have been conceived of by a normal person back in 1990. So I just think to myself, in 30 years, what is that going to look like? What is there any emerging technology that you look at now and you're like, dang, that's going to be a thing. That's really going to be, we got to watch that.
Oh, there's lots of interesting technology. Let's take, for example, that in less than 10 years, you're going to be able to use your phone and just run it around your hand or your foot, and you'll be able to scan that and get a three-dimensional representation of that. And so if you do it to your hand, then you can have custom-made a glove for your hand that fits perfectly. It just fits your hand.
Do that for jeans, and I'm doing it right now, okay? You tell me I can take a picture of my lower half and they'll make jeans that fit my body. Sign me up. Where do I send that photo?
That's exactly what's going to we're going to be seeing here sometime very soon here. Now, this is going to open the door, though, for lots of micro shoe industries. Mm-hmm. Every year we sell 21 billion pair of shoes in the world. And sometime in less than 5 years, roughly 5% of these shoes are going to be smart shoes. Now, smart shoes mean different things to different people, but a smart shoe can have sensors in it. It can have little pores that open and close to control the heat in a shoe. And so if you scan your foot with your phone and you send it in to some mom and pop little shoe shop that specializes in creating shoes for people that are lacrosse players or people that are mountain climbers, or people that are left-handed, or people that play organ, or people that any number of unique applications, there'll be some little mom and pop business that crops up, and they'll sell 2,000 or 3,000 pairs of shoe a year. If they're smart shoes that they sell for $300 or $400 a pair, and they fit better than anything else.
I'm ready for the smart jeans, Thomas Fry. Now you've got my hopes up. I might just have to put my flying car dreams to the side and focus on the jeans that fit, because that's actually a bigger dream for me than the flying car. And
you can actually put a GPS in your pants, because you can walk down the street. It'll buzz on the right side if you're supposed to turn right and buzz on the left side.
Shut up! Except I would be the person going, what is that? Why? What is it? What is biting me? Thomas Fry is with the Da Vinci Institute. You can find him there if you'd like to have him come to your organization and speak, or work with your team to figure out where the future of your industry is going. Thomas, I love it. Thank you as always. We will see you next month.
All right, thank you.
All right, that's Thomas Fry. Susan Witkin, what do you have for me?
I don't have GPS in my pants, I can tell you that. Oh my gosh. Dolly Parton ice cream hitting the market this week. It is called Strawberry Pretzel Pie. Wait to hear what's in it. And now we've got real news coming your way, too. All about the MLB bringing the All-Star Game coming to Denver. And some info on vaccines. 2 o'clock right here, KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
The Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to a Tuesday edition of the show. If you just missed Thomas Fry, I love that segment. Every month I learn something new and nerdy and awesome. One of my favorites. A lot of people weighing in on the text line, by the way, about quantum computing. Quantum computers can solve the private keys of Bitcoin and it will be worthless. Somebody who paid $500,000 for that imaginary house is going to be super upset when somebody, you know, uses a quantum computer to squat in it. Just saying. This one says the electrical requirements for quantum computers will stress out our power grid. The amount of energy required to run those computers is staggering. I will take your word for it.
You know, more and more, I'm not understanding things. What I mean by that is I don't know how Bitcoin works.
Yeah.
And I don't know how the computer that can control it works.
This is the most my dad thing you're ever going to hear me say in my entire life. And the older I get, the more my dad comes out of my mouth. My dad would tell you that he is not going to buy anything that there's a 0% chance he can't touch. And when I buy stock in a company, there is a virtual stock certificate, but I can write that company and say, I would like a stock certificate issued. I can do that. It's still available. It's part of the system. Buying something imaginary with something imaginary that can never be concrete, can never be repossessed, can never be possessed, I'll pass. I will pass. As far as an investment vehicle goes, maybe it's a better way to pay for things, and I'm sure people are making money and good for you. I'm just at the stage right now where I don't want to learn anything like that. I don't feel like it's going to be something that's going to be a part of my life in the near future. It might be, I don't know, but I'm not, can't be bothered. If I can't feel it or touch it, and there's no way I can, I just, no. Not going to do it. Okay, I want to talk about something kind of came up yesterday because we talked about Colorado voter registration. Republicans have a significant issue, but the big story is unaffiliated voters in Colorado far outstrip either party, Democrat or Republican. But now I have a story from the October of 2020, last year, okay? And of the 32 jurisdictions that have registration by party, last year in February of 2020 was the first time in history that the number of voters registered independent and other parties was greater than the number in either major party. So officially, not Democrats and not Republicans were the number one party in the United States in February of 2020 for the first time. Now, by the election or by October of 2020, when this article was written, Democrats and Republicans had registered more voters to their respective parties. Now, some of the minor parties had lost some members there. The Libertarian Party gained some members. But just to give you a sense of perspective, as far as an official third party goes, in October, there were 47,106,084 voters registered in the counties that register by party. Okay, the jurisdictions that registered by party, Republicans had 35,041,482. And then independents and miscellaneous had 33,006,000. So they had more than Republicans. But the Libertarian Party is the next largest official party, and they clock in at a whopping 652,261. So it's not like the Libertarians are nipping at the heels of the Republicans or the Democrats. So I want to couch this conversation properly, because every time I say what I'm about to say, I get emails from people that say, you know, we it won't work for various reasons. What I'm saying is that the two parties that we have now, the Democratic and the Republican Party, have become more unpopular than they've ever been in history before. Otherwise, historically, we would not have had, even for a moment, more voters in other parties or unregistered or unaffiliated or independent than in those parties. And I got to tell you, seeing how things operate, especially in Washington, D.C. right now, you can't argue that the system we have is working. And I've been very open about the fact that I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000, not because I wanted Ralph Nader to be president, but I was voting for the viability of a third party candidate. The problem that we have in our society is that the entire system is set up to cater to Democrats and Republicans. Even if you can get access to the ballot, some states it's very easy to get access to the ballot, others it's not. It's impossible to get into the debates. It's impossible to get the same amount of media coverage. It's impossible to get the unearned media that a candidate needs and must have if they want to move forward in the process. Now, at the local level, it would seem to be even easier to upset this apple cart of this kind of two-party domination of the system, but neither the Democratic nor Republican Party is interested in making it easier for an independent or a third-party candidate to have the same access they do, and they're the ones who set the rules. And I think what I want to ask, the question specifically, I want to talk to people who are registered as unaffiliated or independent voters in Colorado. And by the way, we have unaffiliated voters here, but people still call themselves independents. I think those words are interchangeable. There is an independent party in some states, but I don't even think it's an issue in Colorado. So whatever, independent, unaffiliated, whatever. If you were in that category, I'd love to know why. That's my first question. I just want to know why. And if you want to say if you lean right or you lean left, or I always vote with Republican or I always vote with Democrats, that's fine, but not necessary. But I'm curious as to, you know, why are we not talking about ways to reduce the two-party stranglehold on our system? Is there a better way? That's the question. Because right now, those two parties are not representing a significantly greater number of people in the United States, and certainly not in Colorado, to justify the level of power that they are given by default. If we have a representative form of government, you want the most people to make sure that their views are represented. I think one of the reasons that Colorado has so many unaffiliated voters is we made it easy for independent voters to vote in the primaries. That's the big sticking point. I think if other states adopted open primaries, the parties would shed members like nobody's business. Because a lot of people are tired with being associated with either of these parties. There are a lot of people that kind of work around the center that look at the things that these parties are for, especially during the Donald Trump era in the Republican Party. I can't even tell you anecdotally how many of my friends said, I don't want to be associated with this party. I no longer have a home politically. I just don't. Because much like for a lot of Democrats, the Democratic Party has lurched too far to the left, too far to the progressive social justice warrior kind of camp. For moderates on the right, Trump was a bridge too far. And by the way, if the Democratic or Republican parties go away, it will be entirely self-inflicted wounds. You know, it really will. Because when you make people feel unwelcome, when you make people feel like if they don't toe every single aspect of the party line, they are not allowed, then they will leave, especially if they can vote in primaries. I'm curious if anybody else shares these questions that I have. 303-713-8585. That's 303-713-8585. And I, like I said, I want to know, especially if you're unaffiliated, is there anything that you could do that would, or anything either party could do that would move you to rejoin or join a party for the first time? 303-713-8585. You can also text us, 56690. That's 56690. People are also texting, our paper money is based on nothing tangible. You are correct, but I don't really have a choice. But it's also why I buy gold. Okay? There you go. Now, Dave, you don't necessarily feel the same way about this.
The history of the country tells us that there's always been a great divide between the two parties. And it's it gets worse, it gets better. We're at a time now when it's really divided. But I don't see this as a solution. And although there are more unaffiliated voters, they're not a voting bloc. They're mainly together because they don't know where to go if being unaffiliated means anything. So they're looking for something, which they may or may not find in the two existing parties. But to create a third party that would represent their needs and their concerns, I think is just impractical. And it's proven so throughout our history. The one big example when you had the presidential race between Taft and Wilson. And the third party was the Bull Moose Party, Teddy Roosevelt, and he split the Republican vote and Wilson was elected. And the same thing with Ross Perot. He split the Republican vote and Clinton was elected twice. So I don't see of what practical, given our system of an electoral college, where Ross Perot got millions and millions of votes, but not one single electoral college vote, I don't see what it produces.
My point isn't to go out and create a third party. My point is to make it easier for independent candidates to run and independent candidates to get access to the media, independent candidates to get the same coverage. That's what I'm talking about. If we have all these people who say these two parties don't represent me and I'm an independent voter and an unaffiliated voter, why can't you run? Now, I realize that structurally what I'm saying is nearly impossible because you have to have an organization behind you if you expect to win, especially a larger race, right? A statewide race.
More important than that, you need billions of dollars.
That's my point. So
Abraham Lincoln ain't going to win today.
No, I get it, but I realize that part of it. But I'm just talking logistically. If someone could create enough buzz, if someone, let me use an example, and this is a ridiculous example. This is ridiculous. So I'm just going to concede the point that it's ridiculous before I even launch down this way. Let's say Kim Kardashian decided she wanted to run from Congress from Malibu or whatever that district is, wherever she is, right? Kim Kardashian has, I don't even know how many millions of followers on social media. If she can mobilize those people to become her campaign team, why shouldn't Kim Kardashian have access as an independent to the ballot? If you have the means to take care of all the other problems, we should not have rules in place that make it more difficult just because you don't affiliate with one of these two parties. That's my point. Not create a third party. This is make it easier for people who truly do not want to be affiliated with the party, but have access to the resources of a party structure and think they can do it. Give them the opportunity to make their case right now, I don't like the system where, and you see it in our gubernatorial candidates, Dave, speaking of the Republican Party, they've been horrible because they're picked by partisans. They're unelectable in a state like Colorado. They're unelectable. And yet that's what we get stuck with because partisans decide, and I'm given crappy choices as a voter in a primary. I mean, it's, you know, the Republican Party should be able to do whatever they want to do. But as a moderate person who wants to win, moderate right or moderate left, where do you go? You don't have those opportunities. I'm just talking about expanding access, not the creation of a third party, none of that stuff. Making sure that people who are just running as an independent can do so. Because right now it's damn near impossible. I mean, it's just damn near impossible. Let me go to the phones. Let me go to James first on 4 because he's been waiting longest. Hey, James, you are on KOA.
Hello, ma'am. How are you?
I'm good, sir. What do you got?
So I've been listening a while, and I got quite a few things to respond to. So I think the bottom line of parties is that the American voters need training wheels. They don't do any research on who they vote for, and at best vote on long-held party myths.
Yeah.
This is the party of X abortion rights, or this is the party of gun rights, or this is, and so on and so forth. And that's just not really how it works. Those are platforms to grab votes. Dave, not to, you know, be rude, but he said, how do we know who we're voting for when it comes to judges? Well, it's a simple Google search of how to research your judicial candidates. It's call your local bar association if you want to vote for them. So we just don't do research on who we're voting for anymore. And I don't think the party
research, with
all
due respect, the research isn't available on those. There have been several attempts to do it, and they've all failed. Organizations have tried to investigate and rate the judges. It just hasn't worked. And the result is you get a long list of names that you know nothing about.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, Dave, because the National Association of Women Judges does a pretty great job there. Other,
I mean, they approve,
like
they give you
non-profit.
The recommendation, yeah, but 99.9% are approved. And I'm sorry,
they hold judicial candidate forums. They're recorded. You can watch the videos. You can go to them live. They're not allowed to campaign, like you said, but you can still ask them questions, look at their records, look at their rulings, see how they rule on certain issues. So there's research available for that. But I don't think the parties are divided at all. I think they work very well together. They've done a great job at making sure there's no term limits. And the Democrats and the Republicans, to me, kind of really, I think, work great together to keep themselves in power. So you have to say parties aren't the issue. There should be no parties. There should be candidates. Because then you might have to actually research who you're voting for. And you mentioned that during certain elections, the vote was split between this candidate and that candidate.
Right, right.
So this candidate got elected. But that's not how votes work. I mean, we, as Americans, we're supposed to vote for who we believe in, who identifies best with our political stances.
See, James,
on whatever issue drives us.
You're my spirit animal on this. You and I are idealists on this issue. I totally understand where pragmatic Dave is coming from. Like, I understand
sure. I mean,
what he's saying.
Like
you and I are the dreamers,
right?
Yeah, yeah. You and I are the dreamers for a better society where people are actively engaged citizens who do the right thing.
Yeah, in utopia, sure. That'll be a great system.
Yeah,
but
I was going to say,
we don't live
yeah.
there.
Dave is probably going to end up being more accurate with this than we are. Hey, James, I appreciate the phone call, man. I got to take a break. Susan Witkin is ready
I
to
am.
Go. What do you have? This show has gone by so fast today.
It has. And sign me up for
Golly.
The utopia, okay? I want to live there.
I know.
Can
exactly.
Can I at least visit?
I just want to go to Zootopia where they have bunny cops. That's all. It's a movie. I'm telling you, it's a good movie.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so the governor has his own utopia. And check this out. This is what he wants because he's touting his baseball abilities.
I played for the congressional baseball team in the United States Congress. I'm their all-time RBI leader. And I want fans out there to know that I'm available as a write-in candidate for the All-Star team.
You think that might happen? Maybe not, but I guess he'll get to go to the game. Coors Field chosen to host the summer's All-Star Game. We're going to check in with that. Oh, we're going to check in with Denver civil rights activist Alverda Simmons. Listen to what he has to say about moving the game to Denver. It's all coming your way. 2:30 right here. KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
We are talking about party affiliation. Are you unaffiliated? If you are, why? Let's go to the phones because we got a bunch of people on the line. 303-713-8585. Go to Kyrie in Denver first. Hey, Kyrie, you're on KOA. What's on your mind?
Hey, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Doug Sittel, S-I-T-T-E-L, on Google. In the YouTube uploads, the caption, police admit lying, he's putting...
Go ahead and hang up, Grant, please. I can't stand stuff like that where people call and just read stuff. On to the next phone call. You're going to go to Steve in Aurora. Hey, Steve, you were on KOA.
Good to talk to you, Mandy. Yeah, I wish I had something to put on like that.
No, because you'd be hung up on already.
Funny. Anyways, you know, Dave Lauer's heard this a million times, that party trumps person. Yeah. And when it comes down to the final election, I'm going to agree 100%. But until that point, if you're trying to affect change, you cannot continue to do the same damn thing for 2.5 centuries. Yeah. I mean, I started in 80 when I first registered as an unaffiliated, simply because that I couldn't stand all the hot button issues all the time.
Right.
I think most of us are in this for simple, let's get it done like we would do it at home.
Right.
And
reasonably.
Both parties are pushing all of us out of the tent.
That's exactly the point. That's why in February, for one brief moment in February of 2020, people were not part of the Republican or Democratic Party at a record level. And I think we have to look at that. Now, not even from a partisan standpoint. You know, the parties can figure out how to fix themselves. That's their problem, not my problem. But ultimately, are we moving to a system where a minority of voters are going to decide how our system works? Because that's what we have. And I don't think that the trajectory of these parties is going to change anytime soon. I really don't. I don't think we're going to see this mass migration to either party anytime soon.
I believe you're correct, but I believe this is also part of what put Trump in office. A lot of people don't really see it that way, but originally when he was put in office, a lot of independents had to vote that direction.
Sure, absolutely. You can't win just on party politics.
Absolutely. So we're to the point now where they have to start paying attention to the independents. All of us have been playing the long game, myself since, like I said, 1980. You know, how else are you going to get the attention of that game? I can always choose who I'm going to be governed by on voting day. You know, if I don't have it, you know, I can choose the least of the worst, right? I mean, so if I looked at it from that perspective, I might as well start trying to affect change today.
I hear you. I appreciate the phone call very much, Steve. I'm not looking to try and create a third party. I'm looking to address the issue, which is, I believe very shortly, we're going to get into a situation where people registered as unaffiliated or a third party are bigger as a group than either party who currently controls our entire electoral system. And that becomes an issue for me.
Here's an issue. I look at the Republican Party, and there are certain general issues that they support, certain issues they're against. I look at the Democratic Party, the same is true. I look at both parties and compare and see which party supports things that I support more and am against less. I don't see where another candidate would have to have a whole series of issues that they'd come out on, either pro or con, and I'd do the same thing with them, decide whether I support them or not. I don't see how that would add to my choice that much.
If someone comes up and says, look, here's the deal. I'm not in favor of big government. I'm in favor of reducing the size of government overall. And I'm in favor of, making a truly fair tax system where everybody pays according to their means. We're talking about stuff that nobody else is talking about in a way that nobody else is talking about it. What if you have a person who is fiscally conservative, but truly socially liberal, who full-throatedly supports gay marriage, reproduction rights? You know, that candidate at this moment in time, because the Democrats are so far left, and frankly, the Republican candidates are generally so far right, that person doesn't exist. Well, maybe that person would speak to all of those independents in the middle. Now, realistically, that's not going to happen. But why not give them access to try and win the votes? Saying we have too many choices is not, for me, a great answer. Now, I don't want 97 candidates on the ballot. There has to be some kind of reasonable, you know, restrictions, but we should be able to work through that.
The thing is, to get elected, you have to have a big tent, and you're going to have people that you don't agree with completely. And any new candidate is going to have to do the same thing. He can't be pure, and he can't be uncompromising.
I get it.
Any candidate that's going to be elected is going to have to compromise his principles, his or her principles as well. And I don't see how that's going to make things any better. It'll just give us more.
I happen to think that what we have now is not good. You're happy with a Donald Trump, Joe Biden choice? You know, that binary choice?
Obviously, I'm not.
Yeah, because the Libertarian candidates can't get on the stage. Not to say that the Libertarian candidates would have won, but they can't even get on the stage to debate. That's what I'm talking about. They can't even get enough exposure in the system as it's set up now by Republicans and Democrats.
The system is not, it's not even controlled by the Republicans and the Democrats. It's the networks that make the rules as to who's going to go on.
They send the rules over, and then the parties agree or disagree. That's how it happens. I mean, that's what goes on. They coordinate.
But they have the final decision, and they're looking for ratings, and they have their motivations and reasons for making the decisions they make.
And I understand.
I wish that we could have this candidate that everyone would agree on is better than anything we have. I don't know where this person is.
Well, but neither do I. I'm not saying I do. But to say that person doesn't exist and doesn't deserve access to the same debate stage and the same media just because you can't imagine it happening right now, that's kind of...
let's give them access. That's fine. But
that's my point. That's all I'm talking about. That's all I'm talking about.
The parties can't control that. The media controls that.
Yeah, give me Shane in Aurora. Hello,
Mandy,
Shane.
You?
You're on KOA. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just calling to let you know. I'm unaffiliated, independent, however you want to say it. But, you know, my 10-year-old son, when all the elections were going on, asked me, he's like, Dad, are we Republican or Democrat? I said, son, you're whatever you want to be. Your mother and I were independent. And he's like, well, why? I'm like, because I'm not going to be swayed by any party to tell me I have to vote any which way. I'm going to vote for whoever I think is right, whether it be city, state, county, country. And he's like, oh, well, that makes sense. Like, that's part of voting. You vote for whoever you want. And don't let nobody tell you.
But then there's the factor, though, that when you vote for anyone you want, that makes you feel good. But you want the person you vote for to have a reasonable chance of being elected, or else it's just a worthless exercise. That's the problem with third party candidates. A lot of people say, I like this guy, but he doesn't have a chance in heck. So I'm not going to waste my vote. I want it to mean something. So I don't know in practical terms how this sort of thing can work.
And that's exactly where the access issue comes in, Dave, because when you know that a third party candidate is not going to be on the same debate stage, they're not going to have the same access to media, they're not going to be able to get their word out, of course they don't have a chance. The two things go hand in hand. It gives they don't have a chance,
exactly,
so don't vote
right
for them is an easy argument if you know that they're going to be denied the same chance to win people over. So it's like a circular argument, those two things. If we give people access, let the chips fall where they may, and maybe that
Ross
party vote
Perot
is not a wasted vote.
Ross Perot had access, and he had money. He had the
but he was Ross
necessary.
Perot. He had the most annoying voice in the world.
he was pretty annoying.
He did.
He wasn't. Yes, but he got millions and millions of votes, and he had all the resources available to him. Just give me an example of one of those third-party people that have really been elected.
Because they don't have the same access. That is what I'm talking about. When you cannot get the same access to people to make your case, to talk to people, you're never going to work.
Perot was on stage in every one of those debates.
Who? What Libertarian candidate was? Oh, Ross Perot.
I said Perot was on the stage with all of those debates. He didn't get one electoral vote.
Yeah, well, then he's the wrong candidate. But it doesn't mean it can't be done. Because what we're doing now is failing.
Show me where it's worked, and then I'll have
But
some
Dave,
hope
you keep saying, showing
again.
Me where it's worked. I'm telling you, change the rules and then see if it works. Because right now, you don't have.
What rules specifically do you want changed?
Oh, God, getting access to get on TV. We're going to have Spike Jones. That's wrong. Spike was the VP candidate for the Libertarian Party. I'm having him on in May because he's coming for the Libertarian Convention here in Colorado. We'll talk to him about access. We'll talk to him about what a real third-party presidential candidate has to do and what they have to do to get on television, to get on radio, to get on any of these things. Because everybody has the, well, they don't have a chance. Well, of course they don't have a chance. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a giant circle. All right. Now it's time for the most exciting segment on the radio of its kind in the world of the day. Has BK joined us?
Joining us momentarily.
Oh, BK's on his way. All right, so what is, speak slowly, Dave, so BK can join us. What is our word of the day, please, Dave?
The word of today, Mandy, is a verb.
A verb.
And it is obnubilate. O-B-N-U-B-I-L-A-T-E. Obnubilate. A verb.
Obnubilate. To obnubilate, you obnubilate. You
it's
render
like
something
the
worthless.
Of yesterday's word, if you remember.
Oh wait, what was yesterday's word? To obfuscate. So it's to clarify something.
So to
that was yesterday's word.
Makes things confusing.
Oh wait, yes, confuse something, hide something, be sneaky
confusing.
About something.
Yeah.
There you go. It's to darken, dim, or cover up as with a cloud to obscure.
Very good. Very good. Obnubilate. All right. What is our Jeopardy? Oh, today's trivia question. What famous historical figure is the following oft-quoted line attributed to? The unexamined life is not worth living.
Which philosopher said that?
Yeah.
Is it Aristotle?
Yeah.
No, but Socrates. You're so close. It was Socrates. Yes, Socrates was the guy. Yeah, Socrates said that.
I still need to watch the new Bill and Ted's, by the way.
I haven't either, and I kind of don't because I just watched the old Bill and Ted's, and it's still so good.
But
yes.
it got solid reviews because they spent so much time, and Alex Winter became a screenwriter, so
he's
worked on it for 30 years. So I'm going to give it a shot. I just haven't. Yeah.
All right. Socrates uttered the line shortly before his death when he was standing trial for impiety and for allegedly corrupting the youths of Athens. What is our Jeopardy category,
Dave?
An examined life
is good, but let's not go overboard.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Okay. Category, Jeopardy. Today is goodbye. Every one of these answers begins with the letters B-Y.
Okay.
Here we go. An uninvolved onlooker
Grant.
Or spectator.
Mandy.
Brandon.
Ooh, Grant.
Grant.
Oh,
Grant.
What is bystander?
Dang.
Correct.
Dang.
Bad.
Swooped in like a vulture. Go ahead.
He did. A standing rule governing a corporation's...
Mandy.
Brandon.
Mandy, I think...
Brandon.
What is a bylaw?
Oh, I didn't even hear Mandy say her name.
Because mine was actually said first, BK.
Oh, stop it! God.
You guys canceled
okay, next
each other
one.
Out. I only heard my name.
Don't have a coronary. It's just
Mandy.
A road. And
Brandon.
Mandy.
What is a bypass?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
A secondary substance made
Mandy.
From the manu...
What is a byproduct?
Mandy. Correct.
I was waiting for that one!
Byproduct spelled
B-Y? Yeah.
Yes, it is. And finally, adjective meaning past or former.
Mandy, what is bygone?
You killed this one.
Woo! Good job.
High five me. I just high five myself.
Well, at least I got the Socrates one right.
You did.
So I'm going to hang
you
my hat on that.
You got Socrates right. Yeah, you got Socrates right on that. What are you talking to the guys about here later on there, Brandon?
Talking about the Sam Darnold trade and is Teddy Bridgewater going to become a Denver Bronco perhaps?
Really?
I'm sure that'll be at the very top of the list. Yeah, a guy with Louisville and Florida connections just like you. He's a Miami kid who played at Louisville. So,
My friends in Minnesota are trying to get them to bring him home. They want him to go back to Minnesota.
Maybe so. Well, George Payton, the GM here, was the assistant GM when they drafted him. That doesn't mean it was his favorite player, but he was certainly around him for a couple of years before his knee exploded, unfortunately. And we'll see, he's never thrown more than 15 touchdown passes in a year.
Yeah.
So that shouldn't you know, excite you. But
right.
maybe if Drew Lock falls on his face, and we're yep. certainly not
passable
looking for that,
backup,
he could keep the train on the tracks because the roster's really good if they stay healthy. Yeah. I think.
All right.
And I think a lot of
BK is going to be on with Big Al and JoJo next. Tomorrow, I'm super excited. Former White House spokesperson Dana Perina joins us. She's got a delightful, and I'm calling it that on purpose, it really is a delightful new book called Everything Will Be Okay, Life Lessons for Young Women from a Former Young Woman. And she is going to join us coming up at 1 o'clock. So we're going to make room for Big Al and JoJo. Keep it here for the rest of the day and forever right here on KOA News Radio.